Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 7, Episode 120. I am Dave Bryan from SteelersDepot.com and sitting in for my co-host David Todd once again, as he does normally throughout the offseason, is Alex Kozora. Alex, happy Friday, happy end of football and short season.
Happy Friday, Dave, and we have a very important mission for you. I am expecting you to be at the Mayweather-McGregor fight in Vegas. That's made for you. You better show up.
No, I'm going to, God willing, and me not having to travel, you know, make an unplanned trip back to Florida at the 1st of July, I'm going to, I think, go see the Iron Maiden concert. I've got somebody that's got me sweet tickets there, and that's SUITE, not SWEET tickets, because quite honestly, I don't prefer to be around a large group of humans, if you will. So if I can get tucked away and see that, I'll be up for that. But don't have any connections for that fight. I will watch it, obviously. But, they can have all. I've never been to a professional fight.
This is your chance. This is destiny.
Yeah, we've been coming out to Vegas. Heck, we were coming out to Vegas for 20 years, I think, before we finally moved out here. But never have been to a professional fight or an MMA or you know, wrestling. No, I take that back. I would go to wrestling when I was much younger, when the venue would come to, like, the Civic Center or a municipal auditorium back in Florida, but it was usually lower level SEC championship wrestling type of stuff. I mean, I'm talking, this is way back in the early 80s and stuff like that, back when Austin Idol was wrestling Ric Flair and those kind of things. But that's, you know, outside of baseball and football and hockey games, which I've obviously been to, that's been it. But for those curious about David Todd, I am in constant communication with him. Look, I mean, he's had a lot go on in his life in the last month or so. Also, this time of the offseason, if you remember back to previous off seasons, especially since Alex Kozora arrived on the scene, Alex usually does a lot of the sit-ins during the off season, and I would suspect David to start firing it back up with me probably closer, once the preseason and all gets underway. He might stick his head in for an episode before then, but that's the status on that. So I continue to expect Alex to kind of help me out with these podcasts for the remainder of the offseason, just pretty much as he has done for previous years. Alex, at top of the show, we talked about football in short season is now over. The Steelers wrapped up their mandatory mini camp on Thursday. I don't want to get deep into going down a full injury report again, because we've done that, the last couple of shows here, I think. But on the surface, it doesn't sound like any significant injuries took place during training camp. I know we still don't think have a full idea of what did or did not happen to BJ Finney. I don't think any of the reporters that I've seen have mentioned him being out there. I don't remember seeing any interviews with BJ Finney, so I think we're kind of left to speculating there. But there also haven't been any reports that he's missed practices either. So I would speculate, and that's dangerous to do coming out of mandatory minicamp, that overall this is a healthy team, and there might be one, two, three players that ultimately show up on the active PUP list at the start of training camp. But on the surface, especially when you look around the rest of the league, and particularly the AFC North, it looks like the Steelers got out of their offseason practices fairly clean.
Absolutely, and that's the number one thing for any team in the offseason is get out healthy. And I think overall the Steelers have a lot of the injuries that are there are, you know, precautions and bumps and bruises. So I look at this, you know, for just this mini camp and OTAs for a couple things. Get healthy, you know, young guys pick up the playbook, soak up reps that they might not normally have with veterans, you know, sitting out with ailments or age or whatever, and then working towards guys getting in the best shape of their life. And that's something I think Mike Tomlin preaches more than any other coach in the NFL. He demands that you're in, you know, top physical condition so you can get ready for this grind that is the NFL season, starting with training camp and preseason and regular season and a long playoff run. So, you know, although things are wrapping up and yeah, the players have about 6 weeks off, it's not time to go to McDonald's and start eating crap because, you know, you got to go to La Trobe in tremendous shape. And if you aren't, Tomlin's not going to be happy with you.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, we could rewrite that same post every year, right?
and I intend to.
you know, talking about what Tomlin has to say during that final mandatory minicamp press conference, it's always the same message. And, you know, we just find different ways to kind of frame it, I guess. But, yeah, you know, it's an unexpected for rookies, as Tomlin says, and he preaches throughout the entire offseason that they have to have their bodies ready for the rigors of training camp and everything that goes along with it. So, you know, look, as much as we talk about that kind of thing, we saw last year what Artie Burns missed some time early on. Who else?
Grimble, Finney have had problems in the past.
Yeah, you know the younger players, no matter how much you preach to them, sometimes they just kind of learn it. You know, sometimes you don't know probably, you know, people can tell you how to properly prepare for it, but until you go through it once, you know, you don't really know what to expect, you know, even though the players try to warn the other players and that kind of stuff. So, you know, look, the biggest thing, the biggest takeaways, you know, the biggest takeaway, I think, is, of course, no serious injuries suffered so far during these practices. And as we've heard the coaches tell us time and time again over the years is the previous month worth of practices is instruction. Nobody wins or loses jobs over the course of the last month. Now, can you obviously make an impression? Sure. I don't see how you couldn't possibly make an impression. Can you pick up the playbook faster than some of the other players? Can you start to play faster? The biggest thing over the course of the last 4 weeks is picking up and learning everything. That way, when you do get to La Trobe, you know, you're not having to go through the refresher course again. You hopefully can hit the ground running and playing fast and start playing instead of thinking. Now, will every player be able to do that? Absolutely not. But, you know, I think that's the biggest takeaway from there. Before we get too deep into this thing, let's go over the one transaction that took place earlier in the week. And this was a bit surprising for a few reasons, I think, Alex, because of the layers of it and what we find out over the course of the 24 hours of such a transaction. The Steelers waived former West Virginia running back Russell Shell and then signed back Brandon Brown Dukes, Mercyhurst kid that's been cut and signed to the practice squad. I don't know how many times, Alex? 6, 7, 8?
11.
11.
Poor guy. 11.
This one goes to 11 then. The thing with him, immediately when I saw that move, now Shell obviously was one of the Steelers' 9 undrafted free agents. He got a pretty decent signing bonus, if I remember Joel Corey telling me. I think it was either $5,000 or $7,000 that he received. No, that, you know, in the grand scheme of things, that's not large. But when you look at all the unrestricted free agents this year, I think it was like the fourth. Maybe the fourth highest of the players that they signed. But regardless, immediately when I saw that they had waived Rochelle Shell and signed Brandon Brown Dukes, I thought, well, he had to suffer an injury, and he was waived injured. Well, you know, it doesn't take long for that NFL transaction sheet to come out. After the moves are made, the official one from the league, and it did not have him listed as being waived injured. So that makes you scratch your head and said, hey, did this kid wake up or miss a practice, or was he just not getting it? Because to me, unless you're injured, at this point of the offseason, it takes a lot to get waived, right?
Right, yeah, obviously something, you know, compelled the Steelers to do so. I don't know if, what it was. I wasn't crazy about Shell anyway. I mean, I wasn't enthralled with this undrafted class in general, and I'm surprised that, you know, the core group is still stuck around. Remember last year they lost like half their guys at this point, but, you know, I wasn't too big on Rushell Shell.
And that was the only move so far. Now, the team obviously did sign their two remaining unsigned draft picks that we talked about heading into the week. That, of course, being T.J. Watt and cornerback Cameron Sutton. Both those guys are now under contract. The entire 2017 draft class is under contract. Hooray. No big shock there. You know, with the CBA now and these slotted contracts, it doesn't take long. The days really of players pushing into July or even late July. You know, sure, you had the Bosa situation last year, you know, with the charges and all, but those things are going to be few and far between moving forward. Okay, go ahead.
I was going to say real quick, Dave, you know what I saw the other day? Travis Feeney had a tryout with the Jets, so he's apparently not as injured as the Saints tried to say that he was, and I don't know if at any point he might circle back to Pittsburgh, so I'm just total speculation, but something to keep in mind. I guess he's healthy.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. That I found out about Feeney with the Saints, who okay. they waived him, what was it, a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, and they waived him with the rarely used injury waiver designation. Now, I say rarely used. It's been used about 4 or 5 times over the course of the last 2 weeks. In fact, the Ravens, when they cut Dennis Pitta after he suffered his hip injury, they did so with the injury waiver. What that is you know, they obviously, because of the injury history that Pitta had with his hip, they made him sign an injury waiver. Designated to us, and that usually I talk to Joe Corey about this. It's usually designated and specific as, you know, a type of injury. In Pitta's case, it was hip injury, and in essence, you know, they gave Pitta that new deal and said, look, you know, this is all good and fine, but if you injured that hip again and that causes you, you know, to miss time, then we're going to be able to cut you without any retribution, you know, without any injury benefit or anything. You know, we're not going to have to place you on IR or anything that goes along with that. Now, in the case of Travis Feeney and the Saints, one has to think that he was forced to sign an injury waiver related to his shoulder. If you remember, he had – how many shoulder injuries did he have at Washington? 2, 3?
Several, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, a bunch. So one has to think that he injured I'm just looking at I'm just looking at your post from yesterday. Ask, and it's rare for me to catch spelling mistakes.
I
apologize to the listeners for this, but it just caught me. Ask Alex, Steelers mailbag.
Oh my goodness. No one said anything.
Lord.
It's the mailbag, not the spelling contest.
silly bloggers. Okay, where was I? Travis Feeney. One has to think that the Saints made him sign an injury waiver, and one has to think that at some point during their recent OTA practices, he banged that shoulder up. And they waived him, and they waived him with an injury waiver, meaning that he did not have to revert back to their IR and all like that. So, you know, maybe it was just a bruised shoulder. Maybe he can get back doing some things. It's probably not overly surprising that the Jets worked him out. But I got to be honest, I'll be surprised if Feeney lands anywhere with another team without having to sign one of those injury waivers right there. So that's just a little bit of background about how the injury waiver works there. Let's start first. Let's go over quickly several of the position coaches talked to the media this past week, and that's always a glorious time in my opinion, because we don't get to hear from these guys much, you know, once the regular season starts, hardly any to be exact. And why don't you quickly kind of, even though it was like a 14-minute conversation and entertaining as hell when it gets to talking to Keith Butler, you know, pulls out the dad gums and those kind of comments there. Why don't you recap what Keith Butler did and didn't say, talking about, you know, the coverages and facing the Patriots and everything that goes along with that.
Yeah, it was a great conversation with Keith Butler. I thought he gave great answers. You know, he's a guy that's pretty open and honest, and it couldn't have been more Southern if he was eating a big bowl of grits while talking to these guys. He felt back into his Memphis roots. But you know,
as a matter of fact, that's how we talk down in my neck of the woods, to be quite honest with you. You know, even though it's in Northwest Florida, we consider that Lower Alabama.
But you know, Butler said, you know, what's been talked about, I think, a lot by players during the off season is that, you know, he does expect to play some more man coverage, and he admitted that they played too much spot drop zone last year. And you don't have to be a rocket scientist or a fancy blogger to understand that that happened too much last year. And Butler admitted that they knew they had to do some different stuff, but I think he really implied they just didn't have the flexibility to do so because it was a young secondary and they had to really stick with what they rep throughout the year. So he said more man coverage. I did like the conversation about powder matching and playing a matchup zone. We've talked about that a ton. I think that's kind of the ideal way to marry what the Steelers want to do, play a little bit more man coverage while still sticking with some zone principles. But yeah, you're going to see some more man-to-man this year. And when you have Artie Burns growing and you draft Cam Sutton, those are obviously signs that that's the direction the defense is going.
You know, when you play that, and you've done a good job in the past describing that pattern matching and matchup zone stuff, Alabama likes to run. You know, it's amazing Alabama is able to run as much as they do and as effective as they are, considering that a lot of times a lot of the players that come out of that system aren't overly, I don't know, how should I put it, the brightest candles on the cake. I mean, you know, they've had some knuckleheads come out of there in the past, but you know, Nick Saban has done that for a while. And look, pattern matching and matchup zone is obviously not anything new. It's more new to probably Steelers fans, you know, who don't know kind of what they're looking at it sometimes. I thought Ross Cockrell did a great job of talking a little bit about what it is during one of his recent OTA interviews. And to be quite honest, pattern matching really matches, is really a little bit better suited for a player like Ross Cockrell because of his football IQ, because of him knowing how to count 1, 2, 3 from the inside and knowing when a player reaches 10 yards in certain situations, when to carry him and when to let him go and those kind of things. And same with a guy like, you know, William Gay, would you agree that, you know, of the two guys, and hopefully Artie Burns, look, I mean, Artie Burns, we'll talk about his football IQ, probably behind the rest still because of, you know, just didn't deal with a lot of probably X's and O's during the offseason when he was in Miami. I'm sure his football IQ has grown, at least when it comes to cracking and replacing, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Recognizing that kind of stuff. But would you agree overall that some pattern matching best suits where the abilities of guys, say like Cody Sensabaugh, William Gay, Ross Cockrell?
Yeah, definitely. But I think the whole team has to be behind it. It's not a system that you can use while only two or three guys really get it and two or three guys don't. So it's got to be a whole team thing. But yeah, it's going to be important. I'm glad you brought up Nick Saban because, you know, you think about the Steelers defense and Bama's defense and some ways the coverages are similar. A lot of cover three. And so Saban ran Rip Liz match, which is their way to defend cover three's biggest weakness, four verticals, and the ability to match number two if he goes vertical down the seam instead of spot dropping and letting him get behind you. We've seen some of that from Pittsburgh as well. And so I hope they continue to do that. Pattern matching can be tough to see on film. You know, you have to try to really look at it closely and find a lot of examples. But it's something that they have done in the past. I just hope they do it a little bit more often.
In fact, didn't one of you know, it was more of a kind of a trap situation, but didn't one of Ross Cockrell's interceptions that he's had in Pittsburgh happen in such a coverage? I'm trying to think.
Yeah,
back. That game against Baltimore, wasn't it?
Yep, Baltimore in 2015. It's what I think Butler's pattern matches the most. It's palms coverage, two trap, two read. It's called a bunch of different things, but essentially, if the number two receiver, the slot receiver, runs an out route, the outside cornerback like Cockrell will jump it, and he had an interception there. Artie Burns almost had a pick against Cleveland last year the same way. So I think it's one of the most common pattern matches this defense does.
What is the drawbacks? What are the drawbacks to playing a lot of pattern matching, type of matchup zone, if you will, and the holes? What are some of the better ways to beat it?
Well, it's hard to beat it because as a defense, you're matching up against what the offense does. In theory, the defense is always right because they're reacting to what the offense is doing. The drawback is that it's a lot tougher to install, and there's a lot more margin for error. Like I said, you can't have just two or three corners or two or three guys in your secondary who get it and then one or two guys who are lost. Everyone's got to be on the same page. So there's a heightened communication, and there's a bigger risk for error when it goes wrong. And it's a whole lot tougher to put in than straight cover two. Any rookie cornerback like Artie Burns can pick up cover two pretty easy. When you put in pattern matching and all the combinations that an offense can run and all the routes you have to anticipate, it's a whole lot tougher. So, you know, communication is paramount, and everyone has to be on the same page. And so that's probably the biggest reason why some teams don't use it.
And we've seen in the past two guys run with one player, right?
Right, yeah, because you're not playing a spot, you're not playing a man. It's you line up and you're not really sure who you're going to end up covering, and you have to understand that who the new number one receiver is. You know, one up is two, two up is one. You have to anticipate route combinations, so it's difficult. And that's when you have a young secondary like the Steelers had last year with Sean Davis and Artie Burns. You know, it as much as it sucked to spot drop so much, in one respect, I get why Butler kept doing it, because it's what they started, it's what they repped, and it was the easiest thing for those guys, Burns and Davis, to learn so they could play fast.
You really start to see, in my opinion, you really run the risk when things go bad and missed assignments happen in such situations. That's when you have the 79-yard plays.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Like I said, the margin for error with this stuff is really high, and if someone blows an assignment, then you have a receiver wide open, and obviously bad things are going to happen.
Okay. Anything else stick out to you? You wrote a little bit about the front this morning based on what Keith Butler said the other day.
Yeah, not a major thing, but, I called it a million different things, but essentially it's just an over front. It essentially looks like a 4-3 defense where the backside defensive end plays a nose tackle as a tilted nose, and the regular nose tackle plays a 3-tech, and they shift over to the strong side outside shade on the tight end. I have the post about it. There's a picture in there that explains it better than I can describe it, but you're still going to see some of that, and I think it's a good wrinkle, and Butler said it's effective, and I went through some of the charting briefly, and, I think the numbers back it up. So, kudos to Butler, because that's something that's really his own, and definitely something different than what Dick LeBeau did.
Anything else stick out to you what Butler said?
I think that was he kind of said, get there with four, which I think, yeah. Mike Tomlin's been talking since 2007, so yeah, it's got to happen, but we got to see it happen,
Yeah, I mean, the whole which came first, chicken pressure or the coverage, right? Mm-hmm. I know if you ask myself or you, give me pressure. I mean, I can make some not so good cornerbacks look a little bit better if you can start getting to the quarterback and putting pressure on the quarterback in under 2.6 seconds, 2.4 seconds along those lines. When you're having to blitz, in today's NFL, and even though you try to disguise it, and sometimes you disguise blitz and you don't come, yada yada. The fact of the matter is when you do send those guys, you damn sure better get home. When you when you don't, you got to find a way to consistently get pressure with a four-man rush, no matter how you want to send them. Now sometimes, and we've talked about this in the past, they might send four, and we categorize it in our charting as a blitz because it's an unexpected guy coming. Butler not so much, right? That's how mm-hmm. sometimes there'll be confusion in percentages in what Keith Butler might call blitz and what we might chart as a blitz. But regardless, I don't care how you, I don't care if you send in if you're dropping all four of your front four guys or whatnot and sending all defensive backs. I don't care how you send the four. And I'm obviously just joking there, but you got to find a way to get consistent pressure. And it'll be interesting to see with this group with T.J. Watt, up front now. Obviously Bud Dupree. You know, he wasn't fully healthy until later on in the season last year. James Harrison is James Harrison. You'll have Tuitt and Cam Hayward back healthy. You hopefully have Javon Hargrave as part of that as well, too. So, look, if you can't get consistent pressure with four this year, when are you?
Right, yeah, it's got to happen, and that's the best way to go about it. If you can get there with four and drop seven, your defense is a whole lot better off for it, and you're going to have a lot more freedom and a lot more creativity when you do decide to blitz.
Okay, Carnell Lake, not overly gifted at gab, at times. Obviously more gifted at gab than I am. But, he talked to the media this past week and was asked about each of the individual cornerbacks, and I thought specifically what he said, even though he talked about, who did he talk about? Golson,
Sutton,
Sean Davis, were just a handful. I thought what he said about Golson, even though it wasn't surprising, was the most revealing, I guess. And that's the fact that him saying Cinquez has to make the roster as a special teams gunner and a backup player. And essentially, you can go back and listen to that interview, and in no way, shape, or form should you expect Cinquez Golson to win a starting spot this year. And if he doesn't win a gunning spot, he's probably not got a great shot to make the roster. And Lake also talked a little bit, I don't know if you heard the part about speed, and that even though Golson has returned and is practicing from that foot injury, it's obvious that he doesn't have the same kind of speed that he had when he joined the Steelers a couple of years ago, if you read him between the lines.
Yeah, do you have the exact quote from Lake? Do you have that pulled up?
On the speed, no.
Okay.
I don't have that in front of me.
Right, but he did mention that he's still working his way back and not fully there.
Right, he said it's not surprising that he wouldn't have. He said have the same kind of speed. That's one of the things. I'm paraphrasing here. It's one of the things that he wants, that he hopes that he can work on during the off season, during the remainder of the off season, is regaining that speed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I think they're big red flags for Golson, who's already coming into before the draft and right after the draft with some red flags. Obviously the team adds Cam Sutton and Brian Allen. Golson, these comments from Lake are pretty telling. Whenever you because usually it's the offseason, it's June, and you can sit here and say that, we're competing, we'll see what happens. But for Lake to come in and start off by saying, this guy's got to win a gunner job and Danny Smith's going to have to figure this stuff out, and, kind of just hinting that there's no, a remote chance of him becoming a starter in the slot. That's big. And you hear the reports about Mike Hilton running over him for his team slot at times during OTAs. All bad signs if you're a Cinquez Golson fan.
Absolutely. And like I said, it shouldn't be, anybody listening to this, it shouldn't be overly surprising. And especially if they heard, what Lake had to say. Because Kevin Colbert has said all offseason, this is a guy we've got a lot of questions about. Now, is it slam dunk that Cinquez Golson won't make the 53-man roster? No. I don't think you can go that far. But, he's going to really have to show a lot. He's going to have to make some plays. He's going to have to contribute on special teams. I will be, however, overly shocked if he gets the starting obviously he's not going to start outside. So, that leaves, if he's going to hit a starting spot, it'd be inside. And there's no reason to think that he has a shot at that at this point. So, as far as what Carnell Lake had to say about Cameron Sutton, you want to talk about, you know, massaging a player and it being kind of off-season fluff, you could probably call it that. But he's basically in essence said, look, you don't have to tell this guy more than twice, you know, what to do. Maybe once, maybe twice at most. And we went into this thing that knowing that Cameron Sutton is a very bright from an X's and O's standpoint, was lining people up in that defense at Tennessee. I think overall and Lake made sure to point this out as well too. He wants to start seeing these younger guys start pushing and competing the remainder of the offseason, pushing the guys in front of them to make it make them better. So I think, you know, as far as Sutton goes, that's exactly what you want to hear out of him. You talked about Artie Burns and saying, you know, he wants to see him start drowning people this year. I thought it was a creative way what he had to say. He wants to see Burns start drowning people 1 year after being in a sink and swim situation himself. And I think, you know, that's a natural progression. Look, I mean, say what you will about Artie Burns. It was a rough initial going for Artie Burns in those first four or five games that he played in, that he started in. But he got better, noticeably better. We made jokes about him in that crack and replace situation early from last season. He got better, in my opinion, in recognizing and handling that kind of stuff. But year two, you really expect to see him make leaps and bounds. This year, Lake also talked about Ross Cockrell and said, look, this guy has redeemed himself, meaning where he's come from to where he is now. But you know, not surprising, Lake also said, we need to see Ross Cockrell start making more plays.
Right. I think that's a theme for the cornerbacks in general, just four interceptions as a cornerback unit last year, three of those from Artie Burns. So you'd like to see, you know, Cockrell definitely make some splash plays to be considered, you know, the team's top corner. We'll see if Artie Burns takes that from this year. Dave, let me ask you this, and we might have had this conversation before, but are you surprised that the team started out Cam Sutton on the outside, not in the slot?
I am a little bit, but I think the more that you step away from that, mm-hmm. and try to look at it objectively and why that might have been, I can understand it. Because let's face it, even though he did play in the slot some at Tennessee, where did most of his snaps come?
On the outside.
So why not do what he knows right now and make sure he understands the defense and then start working? I mean, did any of us really think that when Cameron Sutton was drafted that he'd be the week one starting slot guy?
I thought there was a better chance than the average rookie potential slot corner because of his IQ.
I didn't. I accept the fact that I thought that he might get some reps, more reps than maybe what he has at the slot so far during off-season practices. But deep down inside, I never thought the moment that his name was called that he would be the starter in week one. Now, does that mean that I don't think he can eventually take over that, you know, spot at some point during his rookie season? I think that is possible. But I think the further that I step away and look back on this thing, you know, who's going to be your backup outside guys initially?
Well, Sutton and I'm guessing Sensabaugh. I haven't really heard much on Sensabaugh in OTAs, but that's my guess.
Yeah, and that's one guy that we really don't. I mean, you want to talk about a guy that we haven't talked a lot about since he was signed. Can you throw Gay outside? Yeah, you can. Sure. Sensabaugh has played outside before, in addition to the slot. I think Cameron Sutton obviously has a lot of experience, and that's where most of his plays in college came was outside. So, I mean, do we really have an idea of which way that pecking order? Because, look, if you lose one guy at the on the outside, do you want to? It goes back to the old offensive line argument. You know, do you want to move two guys or do you just want to move one guy?
Right.
So let's assume that Gay opens up the season as a starting slot. And let me ask you, is there any reason to believe that that's not going to happen?
I think it's likely. I don't want to completely even close the door on Golson. I know I've kind of been down on him, but I think the team will at least go into camp and just see what this guy can do in a game before making any final judgments. He'll have an opportunity to maybe prove myself wrong and maybe prove the coaches wrong as well. But, yeah, let's assume that Gay is the week one starting slot corner.
Right. You'd at least bet my house that Gay would be the starting slot, right?
I'd bet your house, not my theoretical yeah. house that I don't own.
Yeah, thanks, David Todd. all right, so let's assume, you know, Burns, Gay, and then Cockrell. And Cockrell, you know, has to leave the game. You know, what where you're standing right now, obviously this is going to, you know, we can snip out this part of the recording and compare it to asking the same question in a month and a half from now, probably get a different answer. But where we're sitting right now, what will happen if such a scenario, such a hypothetical that Mike Tomlin mm-hmm. hates happens?
My guess is that they're playing Sutton on one corner spot and Sensabaugh on the other. So Sutton at, let's say, left corner, Sensabaugh at right corner, because, you know, Burns mainly played on one side last year. I think they also like to not move some of those rookie corners around so they're comfortable playing on a particular side. So that's my guess of how they're going to do it. I think they're treating Sensabaugh as that Swiss Army knife where he's going to be the backup slot and backup, you know, right or left corner, Sutton the other. And, you know, I think that's probably the way they're going to approach it.
And that's one of the things that you'll kind of be paying close attention to during training camp is how much, you know, who's lining up on what side. And if they do indeed get some time to switching sides, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because, you know, they tried to do that last year with Burns and Cockrell. They were trying to do some shadowing with Ross Cockrell on A.J. Green, on Brandon Marshall. And I think Burns struggled by playing left and right. And so I think at the end of the year, they kind of changed that and put him on a side each. Although I did go through my charting and Burns moved around a little more than what I thought he did during the season. But I think generally speaking, as you want to keep these guys in a spot, let them grow and be comfortable playing one position.
You still have this team keeping six corners?
It's a tougher argument now that Damian Stafford's on board. And, you know, he's a guy that has a chance to make the roster. And, you know, if he does that come at the expense of a Dangerfield or Golden? Maybe, but it's probably more at a cornerback's expense. So, to answer the question, yes, I think they probably still do keep six. But I'm much less certain about it now than I was before the Stafford signing.
All right, and are your six still, you know, the six probably most of us would choose? I mean,
yeah, Brian Allen was the last one.
Right, so you want to talk about a guy that we still don't, you know, overly know a whole lot about, you know, from the offseason practices, it's Brian Allen. But you have him making it and Golson not, right?
Yeah, that was my initial 53.
Yeah, that's I think that was mine as well, too. It seems like eons ago since that happened. Mm-hmm.
But really, I see, you know, Allen and probably Stafford and Golson as well fighting for one spot.
Okay, anything else that Carnell Lake said that you know, worth discussing?
I think that's about everything Lake did. I wrote about it this morning. Did, you know, leave the door open for Sutton moving to the slot in training camp, but I don't know how terribly likely that is. I think an injury might have to happen for that to occur.
Yeah, and we'll see. I mean, most definitely. Now, Joey Porter also talked about the outside linebackers, and boy, you know, you don't want these rookies' heads to get big, but so far the offseason reports on T.J. Watt have been absolutely fantastic, in great shape, and that's probably not a surprise because he should know what it takes for an NFL player to be in shape, being that how his brothers have gone through it, and he works out with them, of course. But what did Joey Porter say? You can count the mistakes he's made on one hand?
Yeah, that's across 11 practices, so that's – that's high praise. You know what Watt's, you know, beginning Steelers career reminds me of? Marquise Pouncey and how Pouncey took everything in stride, was cool and confident, earned a lot of praise out of the gate. And obviously Pouncey went on to have a great career and still having a great career. So that's kind of what it reminds me of.
Yeah, absolutely. Boy, if this guy can stay healthy right now, and the good thing is you don't need James Harrison in there eating up reps right now. Joey Porter said as much. I mean, what are you going to gain what are you going to gain by James Harrison being out there eating up first team reps right now?
Right, nothing.
So who's the one that's going to gain here? It's obviously T.J. Watt. It's good that they've done this. I think he's admitted he's going to be sleeping with that playbook even more moving forward. But, boy, the quicker that they can get this guy up to speed, the absolute better. And you want to talk about being excited about a guy, a first-round draft pick, as, you know, pretty much everyone is every year with these guys. He's the guy. Anything else Joey Porter said kind of, tilt your ear a little bit?
Not really. The rest of it was mostly coach speak. I wish we had been asked a little bit more about Chickalo, because I'm excited to see what Chickalo brings in camp.
Yeah, and Chickalo, I think, who was it? Keon Adams, what did he tell me? Didn't he tell me Chickalo was running ahead of him on the right side some?
Yep, second team right outside linebacker.
All right, so, Keon Adams, we still don't know too terribly much about him. Let's play a little game now. Let's play a game of what do we think we know. And that obviously probably
not much.
Isn't much here. But let's run through the rookies, the draft picks right now, and maybe even a few of these undrafted free agents as well too. And what we learned or what we think we know about these guys after 4 weeks offseason practices. T.J. Watt.
You're asking what we know about him.
Yeah,
so
what
far?
What we think we know after 4 weeks of practices.
He's definitely going to have a rotation with Harrison at right outside linebacker. I think it could be close to a 50-50 split in terms of snap count, and I think Watt's going to have a successful rookie year. Now, don't expect 8 to 9 sacks. I mean, for a rookie pass rusher, that's tough to do, but I think a good season for him, and I wrote about this the other day on Depot, is if he can have 5 sacks and, several pressures, 6 or 7 pressures, that's a really strong rookie year for him.
We can see this guy come in and get, right off the bat, 25 to 30 snaps, right?
Sure. I mean, like I said, I think it's going to be about a 50-50 split. So if you assume 70 snaps a game for an offense, I can see 30-35 for Watt.
I'm with you there. I think this guy, much like Dick LeBeau tried to do with Jarvis Jones during his rookie season, get him on the field right away. And I think that and hope that they'll be able to do that. And look, 4 or 5 sacks from him out of his rookie season playing 650 snaps. I think that's definitely doable. Juju Smith-Schuster, what do we think we know?
Did you hear a lot about Smith-Schuster during these OTAs? I mean, we knew that he's working in the slot, but did you hear a whole lot beyond that?
Not really. I think Richard Mann said a thing or two about him. I think Todd Haley talked about him just the other day. Obviously, Aditi Kinkle-Ball has been fascinated with, and other guys have been fascinated with how much he's been lining up in the slot. But outside of that, I don't think we've really heard. But, how much have we heard about Sammy Coates or how much have we heard about Justin Hunter,
Sure, but just considering we've heard so much about Watt, usually the rookies get talked about this time of year. But no, everyone knows my thoughts on that. I'm not saying that Smith-Schuster is certainly going to win the starting slot job. It's going to be a battle. Eli Rogers has a lot going for him with the experience and improved play the second half of last year. But, I think it will be a role at the very least with Smith-Schuster, and he will not be battling Martavis Bryant, Nate Burleson. Get your facts straight.
The thing that gets me is, God bless Aditi. I love Aditi. I have conversations with her all the time. She's DM'd me. I've DM'd her before. But some of the hyperbole that I like to say, one of her reports, I think she said, and Juju Smith is developing a strong rapport with quarterback Ben Roethlisberger. Yeah, let's hold off on that a little bit just yet, right? I mean, let's get into camp and let's get into the preseason and you know, when you're catching passes over the middle on air, that's a pretty you know, that those are catches that you better be making, you know.
Right.
Kind of thing there. So, I absolutely look, I mean, this you know, before the draft took place, you know, No way did I think the Steelers were going to draft a guy like Juju Smith-Schuster, and I really didn't even study him that much outside of his highlight tape. But I tell you, the guy that the further you get away from draft day now, you go back and look. We've both obviously done this now. I've watched 10 of the full games, I think, of his from last season and a few from the season before. It's hard not to be excited about him and what he can potentially bring. We've talked about him being potentially a quote-unquote Hines Ward-like player, those kind of things. And, yeah, I think he's a guy that he might not start week one. He might not start week two. But they're going to get him on the field sooner rather than later. And as you pointed out, all offseason since he was drafted, That on the field is likely to be in the slot.
Right. Well, that's a great point, though, Dave, about the rapport. I'm sure that they're working towards that, but the rapports are determined when it's 3rd and 7 and you're running an option route, you know, not in June when you're running on air.
All right, Cameron Sutton, we've already hit on pretty much, but what we think we know about him right now is a guy that has been playing a lot outside, a guy that they're not ruling out moving inside to the slot during training camp, a guy that has matched what we thought he was, you know, ahead of the or after the draft as far as his being a smart player, those kind of things. Am I leaving anything out about what we think we know about Cameron Sutton?
No, I think what we knew about him at Tennessee is carried over directly into Pittsburgh. The only thing I would say is, you know, with him working on the outside, there's obviously a much less of an opportunity for him to make an impact on defense year one. An injury is probably going to happen. So, you know, he's going to have to cut his teeth and make most of his work on special teams.
James Conner, a guy that we think that we don't know much about his injury right now. And that's about, I think, all we can say about James Conner after the first four weeks of the offseason practices is, all right, he really hasn't probably done much outside of individual drills. He's nursing a hamstring injury, and you know, with a training camp 6 weeks away, he better get that thing right in a hurry, or else we're not going to be knowing much more about James Conner on into the team's time at La Trobe.
Right. I'm sure it's all precautionary. I'm guessing he'll be back and ready for training camp, but you're right. We didn't learn a lot.
All right, round four, Joshua Dobbs. You know, I've heard Todd Haley talk about you, smart player, yada, yada. But, I mean, we don't know any more about Josh Dobbs than we did 4 weeks ago.
Yeah, we didn't hear a lot about that. Haley did, was asked about him, said, you know, smart player, like you said, but he's still a rookie. So I assume that means he's still doing some rookie-like things. But, you know, when the bullets start flying in camp in preseason, that's when you're going to learn a lot.
Fifth-round pick, Brian Allen, a guy really, you know, He made a nice interception that we got a great clip of a few weeks ago during OTAs. But in essence, do we know much more about Brian Allen than we knew 4 weeks ago?
No, and that interception actually came in rookie minicamp, so that was kind of the highlight. And then since OTAs and minicamp, we haven't heard much. But you know, we understood that he's a project, and he's going to work on the outside, and he's going to have to again cut his teeth on special teams. So although we haven't heard much directly from him, I think we understand where his path is.
Sixth round pick, Colin Hoba. It's good that we don't know more about Colin Hoba than we did 4 weeks right now. Hopefully we don't learn anything else new about Colin Hoba. Am I right?
You are exactly right, Dave.
Because if we learn something new about him, it's not likely to be good.
No.
Round seven and wrapping things up, Keon Adams. I don't know. I mean, a guy running third team, which essentially is fourth team on the right side, probably getting a rep here and there on the left side. I mean, what's there to pass along about Keon Adams after the last 4 weeks?
I think from the beat guys that were there's some optimism there, at least especially early on in OTAs, that I think people thought he was a better athlete than maybe he was perceived to be and in good shape. So there's some quiet optimism, I think is the phrase I've used before, and I think a good way to describe Keon Adams.
Yeah, and I think I've heard Craig Wolfley on SNR talk, say, be fairly impressed with him as well too over the course of the next 4 weeks. But look, make no mistake, Keon Adams has his shot at the 53-man roster is probably going to have to come at the expense of one Arthur Motes.
Yep.
I mean, I don't know how to boil it down any more than that. And really, in essence, that battle means we better see that number 99 make some plays on special teams during the preseason, and I think it pretty much ends at that. One thing. Okay, we've discussed these draft picks. We'll discuss one of the undrafted guys. That's Ethan Cooper. I think not shocking, but we did find out that Ethan Cooper is playing both guard spots so far during the offseason practices. This is a guy that while his film is scarce from college, he did play left guard at IUP, and he played a little bit of right tackle as well too. So probably expected to see him play both guard spots, or practice at both guard spots during training camp.
Yeah, that's usually how it goes. You start off in one spot for the first week, and then usually after that first week of camp, they flip guys around, get them playing somewhere else. They obviously pride themselves on finding guys that are versatile. So you expect Cooper at left and right guard.
Other than just idle hyperbole, we haven't really heard much about Fazon Odom, Scott Orndorff, Keith Kelsey, Matt Galambos, some of these other undrafted free agents. And as we've said right from the start, this class of undrafted free agents, it's already dwindled by two, right? They cut the quarterback, the Clemson quarterback, and now they've
Oh, yeah.
cut the West Virginia running back Shell. I mean, how many of these undrafted free agents are even going to make it all the way through training camp,
All right. I forgot about Schuessler. They brought in Bart Houston.
So, I mean, you're definitely down to what is, I think, seven undrafted free agents at this point, if I'm not mistaken. I can't remember if they might have had to cut or waive one other guy. Okay. The Steelers, Joey Porter evidently reached out to Darrell Washington in some, I don't know how much making a phone call. How much you can read into that whatsoever, but Joey Porter reached out to him. So, are you reading anything into Darrell Washington? This seemingly contact with him.
Not too much, and I just hope it doesn't happen, Dave. I mean, this guy's got so much baggage, and the Steelers have dealt with that so much, and you finally get yourself a nice quiet off season, and I'd prefer it to stay that way. And it's he hasn't played football since what, 2014? I forget how long it's been. It's just you have to hope that he's back in football shape, and then you have to hope that he stays clean. It's not worth it as a backup inside linebacker.
Yeah, well, the thing I think you have to look at this as well too, okay, is the fact that how much special teams play if signed is a guy like what? I mean, you're not bringing Washington in to start now at this point of this off season.
That would be an awful locker room message to send to Vince Williams, a guy who's done everything the right way and been patient, and then say, here's this guy with all these issues who hasn't played football in 3 years, and yeah, he's going to challenge you. That would be, I think, terrible for the locker room.
And if you bring him in now as a backup, you're doing so with the idea that he can help you on special teams. And at 30 years old, Darrell Washington's not going to help you out on special teams.
Probably not. And even if he did, there's many other cheaper, younger options that have played football within the last 3 years.
With all that said, if an injury happens to one of those two starters, knock on wood, are you bringing him in to take a closer look?
I wouldn't touch him. Nope.
You wouldn't touch him regardless.
No, sir.
You'd much rather have a guy like Tyler Matakavich or Steven Johnson or LJ Fort move in.
Yeah, because they're in football shape and they're doing the right things, and Washington has done neither of those.
Okay. Hopefully, we never have to find out what something like that. But it, you know, it gave us something to write about in the middle of the week and talk about. Look, I don't think there's no reason to think that anything like this is going to happen with Washington. You know, especially with that you know, checkered past and suspension past of his. But stranger things have happened. Okay, we got am I missing anything else before we get to some of our questions here, Alex?
I think that's everything.
And, boy, here we are we're already closing in, I think, on an hour here. Let's see. Where are – do you have any of these questions pulled up already here?
I do not. We still got some time, though. I think we're at, like, 50 minutes, something like that.
Let's see. From – wow. From Michael Drummond on Twitter, predict who will have more sacks in the coming season, Dupree or Watt?
Dupree, and I'm pretty confident in that. Rookies are it's tough. You're going to hit the rookie wall at some point. You got to figure things out. You're learning the defense. Dupree already has all that in his rearview mirror. So Dupree better. Otherwise, either Watt had a spectacular season or Dupree didn't meet expectations.
Yeah, we hope. Most definitely. Look, I mean, anything can happen with James Harrison, and Watt gets in there and gets a lot of playing time and 7-8, you know, maybe sacks because of something like that. But on the surface, is the way things stand right now, the way we, excuse me, the way we think the rotation is going to go on the right side, you know, Dupree better have more sacks because he's going to probably have a lot more opportunities to get after the opposing quarterback. Oh, this next question from Steel Nation Mex also hits on to something that we failed to discuss, Alex. Richard Mann announced this week that he's probably going to retire after the 2017 season. And Steel Nation Mex asks, any candidates to take over that gig?
Well, first of all, it breaks my heart. There's your man. He's going to retire. I hope he coaches forever. We'll see if he said last year, it was last year, so maybe he changes his mind. Probably not. But I know everyone mentions Hines Ward, but it's not always a, you know, okay, you played well, so you can coach well. They're two different jobs, so don't assume that it's going to be Hines Ward.
That's the immediate thing that I think I got back on Twitter was to, hurry up and get Hines Ward in here to start learning and stuff like that. Look, Hines has not even been – Hines has wanted to coach wide receivers at the University of Georgia and is yet to be able to do that. I mean, do you – look, I understand Hines Ward, what he did during his career, yada, yada, but – you know, just because you stand in a garage doesn't make you a car, and right. You know that's the type of thing that pump the brakes on something like that happening. Yeah, it would be kind of hard to go from a guy in Richard Mann, who has the world of experience behind him, to go to a guy like Hines Ward. So I would be shocked if something like that happened. Now. As far as other candidates, Steel Nation Mex, I haven't got a clue who those would be at that point. I'm sure Alex doesn't either.
No, unless Scotty Montgomery gets fired at East Carolina and they bring him back. But I'm really joking about that. So we'll cross that bridge when we come to it.
Right.
It'd probably be somebody you hadn't heard of when they hire somebody.
All right, kind of a funny one from Mike Reese at MDReese21 for Alex. Have you ever used your status at Steelers Depot using the line, "I'm kind of a big deal to pick up girls"?
Well, they've all rejected me, so that line would not work.
Let's see. From Brandon King at King Kong 556 on Twitter. What are the chances Fazan Odom cracks the 53-man as the number three tight end?
Pretty slim, because at number three, when you're on the field, you know, you're in heavy short yard situations, and Odom's got big strides to make as a blocker, so I think practice squad's going to be his ticket.
Also, as a number three, you damn sure better be some sort of a special, you know, it's my crutch. It's my usual easy fallback when talking about veterans on the back end of the roster and rookies, younger players on the back end of the roster. Show me something on special teams, and I'm not convinced Odom can do that. Now, can he be a candidate for practice squad? I think but as we sit right now, late June, I will be surprised if Fazan Odom cracks the Steelers 53-man roster, whatsoever. From Dave at Jens, man, I can't read. At Jens Jeet Jet on Twitter. Ooh, say
it's
that.
It's Pittsburgh language.
Yeah.
I think it's Jens Jeet Jet.
Yeah.
The way we say that.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
There you go. You can tell I'm not a full-blown Jenser. That's like me leaving commas out at the wrong time. You know, it makes a difference when you talk about let's eat grandpa, you know.
There you go.
All right, Dave asks, how many rookies make the team?
Were there eight?
Eight draft picks and you know, a few more undrafted guys.
Undrafted. I think it's gonna be just tough for any of them to make it. So I don't even really consider them unless an inside linebacker catches on. I'll say seven. One of Brian Allen, Keon Adams doesn't make it.
Oh, yo, I know better than to do it because the odds are stacked. Even though the odds have been increased with the release of Greg Warren and some of the other things that have happened here. But I have the slimmest of hopes still right now that all eight draft picks wind up making this 53, and if that doesn't happen, I'm gonna go with Alex and think that seven of the eight make it. I think it's gonna take a lot for an undrafted guy to make it. It's gonna have to take, you know, knock on wood, a few injuries there, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to go with eight. And if that doesn't happen, seven. And for me to predict that all draft picks will make a initial 53-man roster is really, really something. From Steeler Chip, at Steeler Chip on Twitter, your prediction on what Colbert gets done before and during training camp. I think that's pretty simple. I'll start this one off, Alex. You know, I think look, the three guys we've been talking about getting deals all offseason, Le'Veon Bell, Alejandro Villanueva, Stephon Tuitt, to me there's no reason at this point to think that deals don't get done with all three of those players. And, look, I know Ed Bouchette came out in a radio interview this past week saying he doesn't think the Steelers will get Le'Veon Bell signed long-term before July 15th. We'll see. But, as far as getting stuff done, I mean, that's the only thing that I think that we're talking about getting done, right, Alex? Our deals for those three guys.
Yep, those are the, I guess, the quote-unquote big three. It's tough. It's a tight window to get all three done. I think Bell gets done. I've been saying that for a while. I think Villanueva gets done. I guess I'm a little less sure about Tuitt, but maybe that's just because I haven't thought about it as much as the other guys. But we'll see what happens.
All right, from RJ Coretti at @A_Highlander on Twitter, it looks like a question he's had for some time is, how are agents compensated? Does compensation change based on contract amount, term, or structure? Being as how I'm just a wannabe agent, a lot of those details I can't answer. But RJ, do me this favor. The next time that we have announced ahead of time that we will probably have Joel Corey on, a former NFL agent, on, I promise to try to remember to ask this question of him, because he would be the best one to answer it. I don't want to give false information, as far as how they earn or how they're compensated, and if that compensation changes, yada yada. So I think that's a perfect question to tuck in my back pocket, like Tomlin does 2-point plays, and ask it at a later time. There, another one from Steeler Chip. Is D'Angelo Williams the next Coco Beware? You probably don't even know who Coco Beware is, do you, Alex?
No idea.
He is a wrestler, a former wrestler. So, if memory serves me, he came out with pretty outlandish garb, and I think sometimes had a bird on his shoulder, if I'm thinking about the right guy here, with Coco Beware. But, he's obviously – you know, talking about D'Angelo Williams and his wrestling career. Look, I have no idea. I think D Will's just having a little bit of fun with it. I don't expect him to get ankle knee deep or whatnot in the wrestling world there. From Steel 67 at Pastore Mark, I think. Will a long term deal get done with Bell? We already kind of hit on that. I think it will. I mean, to me, there's no reason to think that a deal won't get done with Le'Veon Bell right now. From Tony Richards, man, some of these usernames, at Richard Slay, S-L-A-I-I-I, on Twitter. I know Tony's tweeted us quite a few times in the past. Is Joe Flacco elite?
No, he is not.
No, Joe Flacco is not elite. And, you know, I know they went out and signed Macklin for him this offseason. We're going to find out if the Ravens – I'll put it to you this way. If the Ravens somehow capture the AFC North this year and make a deep playoff run, then maybe we have to talk about Joe Flacco being elite. But until that happens, no. Let's see, Tim Parker, at Sub Etha Tim. Have you looked into Ben's struggles on the road? Which stats of his suffered the most away from Pittsburgh? You know, look, I don't know if you, Tim, I don't know if you read the recent study that our very own Sean McCavney did on the site there. He really dove into the statistical aspect of Roethlisberger on the road, not only last season, but I think last couple of seasons there. Look, we're stumped. I think, Alex, you would agree with this as well, too. I mean, if we could put a finger on what Ben's problems have been on the road, not only last season but the last few seasons, you know, we would have – you want to talk about beating a dead horse, we would have done that.
Right. The team has the same approach. If they knew exactly what the problem was, it'd be corrected. But, you know, as I've said before, it's still a problem, and the fact that you don't exactly know what the problem is doesn't mean that it's any less of an issue, and it's something that really, you know, hamstrung the team last year and has to be fixed, and hopefully it will with the addition of Martavis Bryant back and, you know, full health in 2017.
From Cindy on Twitter, at Kuman to C, I'm not even sure if I said that right, at K-U-M-O-N-T-I-S-C, Cindy asked, D'Angelo Williams, re-sign him?
I'm sorry. It's just not going to happen at this point. Steel signed Nile Davis. They draft James Conner. D Will's moving on with life's work.
Boy, we got a lot of questions. Cindy, we appreciate the question. Buddy Deesh at Deesh138. We'll end on this one, I think, Alex, because we're running out of time. Mm-hmm. Project a Ryan Shazier stat line if he's truly healthy all 16 games. Give me tackles, tackles for loss, sacks, interceptions and forced fumbles. Jeez.
Wow, Deesh. Making us work here for this last one.
Yeah, Jeesh, Deesh. I'll go first, Alex.
All right.
125 total tackles. 28 tackles. 30 tackles for loss. 4 sacks. 2 interceptions. 2 forced fumbles.
How many tackles did he have last year? I feel like he's looking around 80, 90 last year. I'll say he has something maybe a little lower than that, playing the backside linebacker. 95 tackles. 11.
Now remember how many tackles Timmons was registering every year.
Yeah, but he was playing the strong side, and I think that helps you out a little bit. You're getting the run to you a little more often. 95 is still a lot. 11 for a loss, 3 interceptions, and maybe they blitz him a little more, so I'll say he has 5 sacks and a pair of forced fumbles.
Okay. I answered.
Did you say he had 30 tackles for a loss this year? Is that what your projection was?
Yeah, I'm predicting 30. I mean, if anybody can knife in there and you know, average almost two a game, I think it's him.
Yeah,
that would be a huge number, right?
Yeah, that's a huge number. I mean they don't really track it in the NFL, but that'd be monstrous.
What did you put on him?
Like 11, maybe it's a little low. I don't.
Maybe that's something we'll put in the Friday Five questions tonight with the lost tackles for loss for Shazier. Maybe that'll be a good one to ask. All right, we filled this one up, Alex. Anything else to add? Miles Garrett waiting to find out what's happening with that. What was it? A foot injury?
The report is that he's going to be fine. So I think they avoided something serious, which is good for Cleveland.
All right. Anything else to wrap up this show as we get into football and short or non-football and shorts season?
Just about everything. If you do have a film room that you'd like to see done over the offseason as we kind of hit the dead period, tell Dave, tell myself, tweet at us, however you can reach us, and I'll definitely see what we can do with that.
And for everybody who had a question read on the Terrible Podcast today, you will get 1 month's free subscription to SteelersDepot.com.
Yay.
We'll have a little bit of fun with that. All right, great questions again this week. Alex and I probably will be together again on Monday trying to find something to talk about. Until then, I hope you follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. Follow my co-host David Todd at David M. Todd. Follow Alex Kazora at Alex_Kazora. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you like what we do, you want to donate to the cause, please go to SteelersDepot.com. Hit that donate button upper right now. Navigational bar, and as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, and today Alex Kazora.